Welcome to the Write Your Own Story podcast. I'm your host, Betsy Leonidas, and the founder of the Write Your Own Story Company. Girl, I can tell you right now, you're definitely enough. Here we value service, sisterhood, connection, laughter, and that super genuine, keep it real, tell you like it is honesty. My hope is at the end of each episode, you realize you can do whatever it is you dream about and that you are not alone with what you struggle with. I'm hoping that you are snapping and clapping and hell yes in your way through each one of these episodes. So if this tracks with you, let's get started. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome everybody back to the latest episode of the Write Your Own Story podcast. I'm your host, Betsy Leonidas, and I am here with dear friend, Hillary Widener.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being on.
So excited to be here.
This episode, we're going to have such a hard time staying on task because
we've been here for about 2 hours already.
Literally 2 hours. We just keep catching up and like then getting into fashion and updos and hot messes and kids. Yes. Yeah, so I hope that's what this episode feels like, is just two awesome friends catching up, like just so excited to be together. But what I love about Hillary, one of the many things I love about Hillary, is that she has a really important story to tell about her daughter, Bea, and living with a sort of medically fragile, sort of always medically on child. And I think she's so passionate. You know, I like to start every episode with really nailing that intention for listeners to understand. And Hillary is really passionate about giving hope to families that have, you know, sort of high needs medical children, which I think is so, so important. Hope is everything.
Absolutely.
And so I'm super grateful for your time and for all that you do for the community. And I can't wait to get
Thanks.
Into that.
Yeah.
You're the best. You're the best. Okay. So let's quickly start with how we know each other. So Hillary's daughter, B, how old's B?
She's nine.
Third
grade.
Okay. Yep. And Adeline's 10.
Yeah.
And so Adeline was a liver kid. Adeline went into liver failure when she was born, had a grade 3 out of 4 brain bleed, went into hypertension. We were high risk for 2 years, and is now a completely typical healthy child. But then a year later, Hillary has liver issues, which we will get into all of that. And everyone in Cincinnati was like,
You have to meet.
Yeah, you have to meet. You have to meet. And I was like, I don't know her. And like in Cincinnati, for those who aren't from Cincinnati, everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we didn't know each other. This is so silly. And you'll hear how silly this is. So we were at our friend Emily's wedding and I bumped into you during cocktail. I was like, wait, are you?
Yeah, we're supposed to meet.
So it was so amazing. Then
so fun.
We ended up sitting at the same table together. Yeah. Thanks, Em. And we're sitting with our friend Lindsay Lewis and Lindsay Morton, I should say. Yeah. No one ever gets to keep their
forever Lindsay.
Forever Lindsay Lowe. And we learned that we are in the same sorority family. So we're actually related.
We're related. We're sisters.
We're sisters.
Delta Gamma sisters.
Delta Gamma sisters. But like, no joke, I will always put in my application to be one of your sisters with your two sisters or a guy or girl. I was like,
I
either want to be a Kelly girl or a guy or girl. I will put my application in.
Yeah.
You're in. I knew it. Okay. Awesome. So I know that is like such a silly story, but like, isn't that weird how the world works? People are like, you need to meet. And then like that we're so connected on so many different things. Life is
special.
What were we saying? Life is weird.
Life is weird.
Life is real
weird.
Good. Yeah. But like, these are the moments where you're like, yeah, life's really good.
Totally.
Too. I know. Okay. So I also like to put the pressure on every guest. Just kidding. But like, could you just give like a little rundown of who you are?
Sure.
Yeah.
My name is Hillary. I am, married. Mm-hmm. I've got 3 little girls, Beatrice, Poppy and Louise. They're in 3rd grade, 1st grade, and pre-K. One of all 3 off to school next year.
I just got goosebumps for you.
It's wild. I stay home with them now. I didn't always. After I graduated from college, I was a digital and social media consultant for a number of years, like a little over 10 years.
Yes.
And I loved it. I loved my job. I loved the people I worked with. And I needed to switch it up a little. So I decided to take a little break, stay home with the girls. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I've become very passionate about organ donation, about Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and taking care of my kiddos. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. If you were to ask my girls what I do for a job, they think I am fully employed by Cincinnati Children's Hospital. They think I drop them off at school and I go straight to the hospital every day. And I don't tell them that I don't do
right.
that.
If you're like, we'll go with that.
Yeah, we're just going to go with it.
You know, it's so funny. Like before you finished that sentence to say Cincinnati Children's, I was like, are they going to say she's a full-time gardener?
Yeah.
Are they going to say that like she actually is still a digital media consultant? Because you're savvy as all get out, girl.
That's nice of you to say. I do. I've used Instagram to help spread the news about what was going on for with B, which I know we'll get into, but in the early stages, it was very hard for me to keep up with all the texts and phone calls and emails. And I used it as a way to streamline that communication to my community and my group as to what was going on with her. And it grew from there. And, you know, I know the hardships of social media for kiddos, especially, but in the adult world, I know the benefits that you can use for communication, for fundraising, and staying connected.
And like clearly so many people, like your following grew substantially. I mean, you had a great following to start, but like it grew substantially
because
people were so curious and also so identified. But then like, I don't know about you, but like the ripple effect and like you feel all those prayers.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's the thing. I think there's two ways that I've noticed that people go about hardship and tragedy in some cases. And a lot of people keep it very close to the chest. And I love that about people. I think that's really an important self-preservation way to handle things. I have found for me, it is just, I was putting out there what was going on with Beatrice, first of all, to see if anybody could help us. I felt so in a spot of just like, I'll take any and all advice, thoughts, and more specifically prayers. And I felt that those good vibes and those prayers and that help really has helped her get where she is. So
I couldn't agree more.
I've stayed on that path.
Yes. And don't ever stop.
Yeah, no, it's been like, good for us.
And I mean, she deserves every prayer.
Totally.
And like, I really felt that with Adeline too. Like I just felt like the whole world was rooting for us.
I know.
And
it can be a really hard place to be in. I just knew that we couldn't do it by ourselves, you know?
Yeah. And I think I also so appreciate the like notion that some people grieve or process privately.
Totally.
You and I don't.
Yeah, no, I just don't. And, you know, there's so many things that I am private about, which might be surprising to people, you know, but in this type of situation, it's just, it's helped us.
Yeah. Yeah. I respect that a lot. Thank you so much for being here.
Anytime.
You were just a
I'm very impressed by the full experience here. The studio, the coffee.
I know, right? We're just living full our service. Best life.
I might come back tomorrow.
Yes, please. Literally, I'm going to make us an agenda. Side note, I had a girls' dinner last night. I was telling you, with two coworkers who I haven't seen in 8 years. One literally brought a typed agenda. I've never been happier in my life.
I respect it.
Honestly, next time we're hanging out, I'm bringing a typed
agenda. It's so funny because if I have a couple of friends that are listening to this, I fully... Like if we're walking or doing something like next week, I'll be like, we need a full agenda.
Just
start texting each other things.
Yes.
Cause it's hard to keep it all.
I know.
It all straight.
It's like, and let's prioritize the agenda. Cause like we only have an hour to walk. Yeah. I love this. Yeah, okay, fine. Next time we're here, I'm bringing
So we have our agenda.
Yeah. We obviously have an agenda. Yeah. It's all business though. Okay. Yeah. So to start us off, can you just tell us B's story?
Sure. So, Jordan and I are both from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He grew up on the West Side. I grew up on the East Side. We met in college at Miami of Ohio. And, you know, we got married and lived in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And when B was born, she was a couple weeks early. So it was at the end of 2014. Her birthday was at the end of December of 2014. And when she was born, totally normal.
Yeah.
I had a C-section.
Was it a dramatic
early? It was no, it was like 2.5 weeks early. Okay. I mean, she was considered full term.
Yeah.
I had a C-section and she was everything was totally normal.
Yeah.
Came home from the hospital, looked a little jaundiced, but
a lot of babies do.
Yep. So I feel like we were fine. We never had any kids before. So we were like, she's great.
Yeah.
We sleeping put her in a the lot. Sunlight. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. Put her in the windowsill. Yep. We've all been there.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, as the weeks progressed, we were bringing her back to the pediatrician, like her jaundice still isn't going away. And the pediatrician would say, you know, bring her back in a week, let's get eyes on her again. And finally, we brought her back to the pediatrician at like 8 weeks. And the pediatrician was like, she looks good, go back home, bring her back. And it like was the first time that I felt like my mom instinct really kicked in. Ugh. And I was like, the whites of her eyes are looking yellow. Like it's not just her skin anymore.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And she goes, okay, I can see what you're saying. Let's send her for blood work.
Yeah.
Sent her for blood work, came home, put her to bed, like at night. I'll never forget. We were sitting around in the family room and they said, oh, we'll get the results. We'll call you in a couple of days. And we were like, great. Cheers.
Right.
You know, like did it. We saw a baby get her heel pricked and it was the hardest thing we've ever witnessed.
Yes.
And it was like a very hard day. Little did we know what was to come.
What was to come. Yes.
But that happened and they called us, the pediatrician, and she was also on the phone with a liver doc at Children's and conferenced us in and said, we've got to talk to you. Where are you? And we were like, well, we're at home. We just put the baby to bed. And they said, you need to pack a bag and come to the hospital immediately.
Shit.
So, and she was like 8 weeks old. So I had never been to Cincinnati Children's Hospital growing up in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Jordan had never been to Cincinnati Hospital.
Yeah.
Growing up in Cincinnati. I didn't even know where it was, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah.
And we got in the car and we drove there and a doctor met us by the time we got checked in our room. It was the middle of the night and that doctor got up out of bed, came and met us at the hospital and started kind of explaining to us what the blood work showed, which was showing a major liver disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God. Let's pause there for a second. Like one, it's so true to know, like I have such empathy for having the rug pulled out from you.
Totally.
I thought Adeline was completely healthy. And then it was like, whoop, she's dying. And that, like that drive to the hospital, I'm sure is an unforgettable one.
Yeah.
Were you like in shock and adrenaline? Were you flipping out?
I can keep it very steady. Uh-huh.
You're good in a panic.
I'm like, oh, I'm great in a panic.
Call us.
Pack your stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Let's
like,
do it.
Of course, I'm like worried out of my mind.
But you can like compartmentalize that.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I can totally compartmentalize it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until the doctor came and did the whole, and then said transplant. But I was like, you know, the panic for sure set in.
Yes.
So no, I kept a steady, you know, eye on the road and we got there and got her settled in.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So she's 8 weeks.
Yep.
She's in the little crib.
Yep.
In the
she's up there on A4 North, our favorite floor ever. Mm-hmm. And they basically said she has something called biliary atresia. And biliary atresia is, there's no known cause for it. The only cure for it is typically a transplant.
Yeah.
You can have like a Hail Mary surgery, basically called a Kasai procedure. It's an 8-hour surgery where they basically, I should back up. Biliary atresia is where your liver does not drain bile.
Oh.
So your body fills with bile and fills with poison and it kills your liver, makes it hard and black and non-functioning.
Yes.
You stop gaining weight, you stop growing. Mm-hmm. So they do typically a procedure early on if it's caught early enough, called a Kasai surgery. It's an 8-hour procedure where they basically go in and they try to rework your ductwork to start getting the bile to drain.
Yeah.
And that surgery can last until they're in kindergarten and then they need a transplant. It can last till they're in 8th grade and then they need a transplant, or it can last till they go off to college and then they need a transplant. But typically kids with Kasai's always need a transplant eventually.
Also, like I didn't realize how important the liver was.
Oh, same.
I was
my
like,
new favorite organ.
Literally favorite organ. I was like, thank you for processing my alcohol.
Totally.
I'm so embarrassed to say that, but I was literally. And then like, you know, if you like people, you can live without a kidney. So like, I don't know. They all feel
like your gallbladder.
Right.
I'm like, yep. No,
take it out.
Liver, take it out.
You cannot take the liver out.
You cannot take the liver out.
It's super.
You can take part of the liver out.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Right. Apparently you can.
Apparently you can.
Yeah. I know. It's just like the things that you didn't know you were going to know.
I know.
Here you are.
Totally. Agreed. And they, in that moment were like, we need to, in order to try to get this Kasai surgery to work for her, early intervention is key. So in 5 days, we're going to have, this Kasai procedure.
Oh my God.
On this, you know, 8-9 week old baby. And they do a total incision side to side of her belly, get in there, 8 hours of surgery.
Oh my God.
And then cross our fingers that it worked.
And they want to do that first because they want you older for transplant. So your body is more stable.
Correct.
Okay.
And just the bigger the kid, the better,
you
know, your body is to handle a major surgery like that. So you hit it right on the
I do remember them saying with Adeline, she was 5 times too small for a liver transplant when she was, so you have to be of some sort.
You have to be some sort.
So that surgery has to work.
And healthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct. So we did the surgery. We were in the hospital.
Oh my God.
she came out of surgery and everybody was hopeful. She was in for probably a week or so afterwards.
Was she literally in the surgery for full 8 hours?
Full 8 hours.
How did you ever pass that time? It was crazy.
I don't even know. I feel like it was such a blur. And honestly, never having, we are so lucky that she was our first because there was nothing else to focus on.
Yeah.
Our jobs were more than understanding. The people we worked with, our coworkers. I mean, my specifically, you know, my group at work was really, really helpful during all
this. So supportive.
So supportive.
Don't you love, like, I mean, when people realize, like, because corporate is corporate and like,
totally.
It's all business, but like when life happens, people get down to really being people. Not that they weren't before, totally. But like, I don't know. I just find that
they really cared about like my well-being and my family.
Yeah.
And I was still, I was just back, or I wasn't even back yet.
Oh, right. From maternity leave. Yeah. 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 Oh,
and so this was all like, but they let me stay out a little longer. I just, they were wonderful. I can't say enough great things about them.
Yeah. So if you are a boss out there and someone is going through something medically, I know rules are rules and all that thing,
totally.
But just continue to lean into the human side of who you are because it is so
important. And other people on my team picked up for me. I mean, but it wouldn't have, I just, you know, I have such a soft spot in my heart for Jim Bryant and Mike Frederick always and forever. I mean, I get emotionally still there. Like I will never be able to repay them for even making me feel like family's first, you know?
Yeah.
We all know it, but to have people, you know, really be on your side about it. So
100%.
She recovered from the surgery. We went home and shortly thereafter realized it was not going to work. So
how did you realize? Were they checking labs?
Checking labs. She was still really irritable. Her jaundice wasn't draining.
Oh, so you have an irritable baby on top of this.
Yeah, right. I mean,
so that's
it's
like,
just, oh yeah, they're super irritable because they're just, they're filled with poison. I mean, they're like, they give them steroids, heavy doses of steroids.
So she's like jacked up.
Full rage.
Yeah.
I mean, full baby rage.
You had a full baby rage.
Yeah. And so it just, it didn't work. I mean, we knew it kind of very shortly thereafter.
Oh,
yeah.
God, that's so devastating.
Yeah, it was honestly, I remember feeling at the time, let's just get this over with.
Right.
Let's just do the transplant.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I could live every year thinking like, is this what's next? Is this this year? Is it this year? So, and
great
I tend
point.
To always like see the sunny side. I think it's a part of like my coping, you know, I just always do. So I feel like I was ready for it.
Yeah. I love it. You're like, let's just, again, like
let's do it.
You're good in a crisis. So it's
I felt good about it.
You should feel good about it. And you're like, okay, let's get it done.
Yeah.
Let's just fix it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then how did you get to the transplant stage?
Right. So she was home for a little while. Uh-huh. And if anybody listening has ever known somebody to be on or in need of an organ, it's a torturous waiting period. You basically, there's so many people that need transplants and not as many organ donors that these kiddos and adults have to get sicker and sicker and sicker. And the higher, you know, the sicker you are, the higher up on the list that you go. So it's like you get, it's all points. You get a point value based on how sick you are.
Oh my God.
And you want to watch, you don't want to watch your kid become sicker, but you also want them to
move
go
up the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a very challenging, situation. So pretty early on, she was on the list.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We listed her. We carried around a beeper back at work. So like if the beeper went off and she had a match, we'd have to all meet at the hospital and get it going.
Right. Because it's a time sensitive
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
from the donor's perspective,
from the donor's perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And it was just, it was crazy. It was a crazy time because at the same time she was getting sicker. She stopped growing. Hmm. She was on a feeding tube.
Yep.
She was on a ton of steroids.
I'm sure she was trying to rip that feeding tube out. Oh, she's irritable.
Totally.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
It's right going through her nose. Like,
right. Right.
And the doctors kept saying to her, saying to us, like the bigger she can be for transplant, the better off she'll be.
Right. But you're like so stressed because your baby's not growing.
Right. So it was crazy. So we also then realized that living donation for liver was a thing. We didn't even know, like we know kidneys, obviously you can be a donor.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known.
I know. Liver is an organ that you can donate as a living human being.
How did you find that out?
You know, we read a lot.
Sure.
And in Japan and in Canada, it's more of like what their default program is like, if you need a liver, they're not waiting around. They're looking for, they're looking at everybody standing around. Like
who's going to do it?
And we are just a little behind on that.
Yeah.
We brought it up to the hospital and initially they gave us pretty big pushback because they just kept saying, you know, she'll get an organ. There's no real, no place on the planet where she wouldn't get something. And we just were impatient people.
Well, and you just knew what you wanted.
We knew what we wanted. And we just said, could this be an option for us? And they said, no. And we pushed and pushed, and long story long, they said, fine, we'll see if you're even a match to even see if this
is. So you were just like, let's see if Jordan and I are a match.
Yeah, let's just see if one of us are a match. Yeah. I mean, we have no other kids to take care of. Right. We've only have each other. Like, let's get moving on this.
Yeah.
She's not getting any better.
Right.
So the mom is a better donor till the child turns 3. So they went through my process first.
Okay.
And I went through about 6 to 8 weeks worth of testing.
Okay.
And that was everything from physical, like your full anatomy, to a psyche eval.
Okay.
To make sure that you are like of sound mind.
Yeah. To make a decision like that. Okay. Yep. Okay. So if anyone is considering donating, that's the kind of process that they have.
It's a pretty extensive process, right? Good. Which is good.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
You know, you want to make sure the person's healthy enough to donate, but you also want to make sure that the organs that they have are healthy enough to give. So
absolutely,
it was a good situation. It was hard for us because we were so young and newlyweds, and like our parents and families were involved, and everyone had an opinion.
Oh, I can only imagine.
You know, my parents had a hard time.
I can imagine.
Think you should wait. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to listen to the hospital things. This will happen without having to put yourself at risk.
Yeah.
We were meeting with attorneys and doing living wills and all that stuff. It was a very emotional and intense time period, but there was nothing that was stopping us.
Yeah. And I'm sure for Jordan to be like, okay, you're going to.
Right. I think he always thought that like, oh, they'll default to me, you know, like I'll be like, so let's do it. I'll be the one.
You know? He thought he would be the one.
Oh yeah. I feel like as the guy and as the man, you're not thinking like, you're thinking you can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. You're thinking like it's you, this is your thing to do.
Yeah.
And when it wasn't, I think that shifted a little bit headspace of worry.
Yes.
And, thankfully, we found out I was a match. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Everything checked out, and I was looking like a good match.
And so that was a 6 to 8 week evaluation process, but she still hadn't gotten a
donor. And we had said our decision was like, if something comes our way that we feel like is a good match, we will take it.
Yeah.
If not, if we're still chugging along, we are going to try to do it this way.
Do it this way.
Yeah.
Does that, exploring the option of being a living donor, does that affect your point system at all?
It doesn't.
Okay.
As far as I know, things might have changed. I mean, we're like 9 years in almost, but things might have changed.
Okay.
But at the time, not. That's a great question.
So you're like gearing up for surgery. Like,
yeah. So the last time they had done a living donation, liver transplant, parent to child was like 3 years prior.
Okay.
And so, I mean, you just need double of everything. So it's really hard. You need double the OR, you need double the staff, double the surgeons. Like, everything. So scheduling that was kind of a bear.
Yeah.
My hat's off to them. They had one of the founders or the founder of their liver program, Dr. Reichman, flew up from Florida was like, I'm going to take on one of these patients. And then at the time when all this was going on, we'd moved into our house in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And a doctor comes in, and she is a total badass, this lady, Dr. Maria Alonso. She comes in, she goes, my name is Dr. Maria Alonso. I will be performing the liver transplant. And by the way, I think we're neighbors. And we were like, what?
You're like,
we just moved into our house. Best friends. She lived like 5 houses down in this cul-de-sac that we lived in.
Yeah.
And it just all happened so naturally and great. And so she was the head surgeon on Beatrice's transplant. And then I had an incredible surgeon, Dr. Greg Tiao, who's still with the hospital.
Yeah.
As the head of my transplant. And then Dr. Reichman flew up for B.
Yeah.
And we had another surgeon helping Dr. Tiao. And so they scheduled it.
Oh my God.
For July.
What is prepping for that kind of surgery like? Were you guys isolated? Like, did you,
Cause like if you get sick or anything, like everything gets pushed off.
Yeah.
I really put the pedal to the metal on the, exercise regimen.
Okay, girl. They said
if you are the more fit you are, the better off you'll do after surgery.
I love that.
So I partnered with Define. Oakley really took me in, and they were like, let's do this. And they helped me get on a good schedule and just feel good. They did a donation ride for B and for Cincinnati Children's, but in B's name.
Yeah.
And really kind of just put the pedal to the metal with that while we were both working and managing her and all that. It was a good prep leading up, good distraction.
Were you able to get help at home? Like, can people watch her? Like, is she so hard because she's so irritable and she's high risk and she's got the feeding tube, or were you able to lean on community at all?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we had nurses that helped us. Awesome. We had both of our parents, sets of parents were in town.
Good.
Yes, we were very supported in that way.
Okay. So like people out there, like ask for help,
ask for help. I mean, you could never do it.
Yeah.
You know, it just all of it, like I couldn't leave my job because our insurance was with me and my insurance was so good.
Yeah. Right.
Which I didn't even realize.
Yeah. I know. You don't know until you know.
You don't know till you know. Yeah. And I feel like so many people, and I was one of the, that was like, is our insurance good? I feel like our insurance, it was phenomenal for us.
Ugh.
So that was like not a question for me to kind of step back. So we both just had to kind of like work on it and figure it out. But yes, ask for help. I mean, it's the only way to stay sane.
Oh my God. Okay. So it's surgery day.
Surgery day. We spent the night at the hospital the night before she did.
For prep.
Yep. And Jordan stayed with her and I spent the night at home by myself. I'll never forget. He left me like the nicest letter at home. And I got ready. I went to bed early. I feel like I woke up like this is my Super Bowl.
Was it scary?
I don't remember ever feeling scared for myself.
Yeah.
I remember when leading up to the surgery, meeting with Dr. Tiao, who is my surgeon.
Yeah.
I was under very strict instructions never to bring B to my doctor's appointments because my doctors were in charge of me and my well-being.
Okay.
And you can't muddy the waters. They couldn't muddy the waters of like looking at this baby, but then also trying to do what was best for me.
Wow.
And the only time I got nervous was about her. And I remember saying to Dr. Tiao, whatever happens in the room next to me, you better leave. I'm telling you now, you better leave me and run over there.
Yeah.
Like I don't,
right.
I'm not worried about myself.
Right.
I'm worried about her. I feel like I will be fine.
Yeah.
My family will be fine. Everybody will be fine.
Yeah.
She is the priority.
Yeah.
And he told me before they, you know, had me fall asleep. He was like, I hear you and I got it.
Yeah. So, because you're like, to be clear.
Yeah. To be clear. I know what the protocol is.
Yes.
I know what you're supposed to be doing, but like,
right.
I am secondary in this situation all the way around.
Oh God.
And so we went there, they wheeled me back early because they have to do that surgery first and get me all prepped. And we had side-by-side operating rooms, side-by-side staff, side-by-side everything because they just pick it up.
Yeah.
When you're donating a liver, you're not donating your whole organ.
Yes. Okay. So it's a liver. Section.
It's a, it's an organ that regenerates. It's a great, it's a great organ to need.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It can fail and regenerate.
Totally. So they took out part of mine.
Uh-huh.
And they walked it next door and put it inside of her. So
Oh my God.
It was a wild, it was like a 12-hour surgery when it was all said and done. And
between the two of you?
Yes. Like, because we overlapped for the majority of it. So we were both in there and they put my family in a private waiting room.
Yeah.
And a nurse from the OR, both ORs would come out once an hour to update everybody on how it was going.
Yeah.
And I knew how long the surgery would be. So I wrote a card. I felt so bad for Jordan because, you know, I just imagined like he had the worst job out of it all. I was asleep the whole time. I was like, this is fine.
Yeah.
He was the one that was so worried.
I can't imagine.
So I gave the nurse ahead of time 12 cards. I said, every hour when you go out, you just hand one of these to him. And, you know, I just wanted him to know that I was with him, even if I wasn't physically sitting there because we're both going through it. I mean, it was just, he had the harder job. I still maintain.
Yeah. Well, coin toss, but.
Well, he really did. I mean, the worry that he had and then the aftercare, all the stuff, it was on his shoulders.
Yeah.
So, you know, we went through the whole entire thing. I remember waking up on A4 North, Dr. Tiao coming in and being like, what's your pain scale? 1 to 10. And I was like, it's a 15. I can't breathe. And my body is on fire.
Oh my God. Hillary.
And so they just like dosed me up with more meds. Yeah. I fell back asleep.
Good.
And then when I woke up again in A4 North, I have an incision from my belly button to my breastbone.
Yeah.
The entire length of my stomach. And, she had already had the one from the Kasai.
Yeah.
And so she's got another one. It kind of looks like a peace sign kind of on her stomach.
Yeah.
And we both were in the ICU. And then we got moved down to A4 North.
Yeah.
So we both recovered there. They thought I would be in for 2 weeks. I was out in under a week and they thought she would be there for all of a month and she was out in 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
So
did you know, like, how do you take care? How do you recover from that? Like, how, like, were you on meds? Were you like,
yeah, so they,
this is a major surgery.
Major surgery.
And we just discussed the liver. So important.
I know the liver's so important. It was, they, yes, I was just, you know, it couldn't lift anything, mm-hmm. had to rest. I mean, mm-hmm. I was exhausted. It's a lot from your body. You lose yes. a lot of blood. It's
yes.
like,
yes.
So I recovered, and I was on pain meds, and I wasn't allowed to drive mm-hmm. until I was off my pain meds. Mm-hmm. And even then they were like, you need to wait 2 weeks. Cause you're, you know, if yeah. you've had a C-section or any major surgery, you're right. like,
yeah, your reflexes are no
yeah, they're just not in a good spot. So yeah. I was so grateful, but when I went home,
yeah.
she was still in the hospital. So it was really tricky because yeah. I wanted to be there yes. all day with her yes. every day, but I was also recovering.
Yes.
So both of our moms took shifts, and he did too when mm-hmm. he was always there, but then he also like had to work a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. This is life. This is real life for high risk kids.
Totally.
Parents have to work.
They have to work. Yeah. So yeah. Both of our moms really stepped in there.
Yeah.
And I have a really good friend. A good friend, not like we're super close good.
Yeah.
But just a nice,
solid
friend.
I love a solid friend.
Who is very involved at Uber, was very involved at Uber, and we went to college with them. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they, you know, they checked in, and before I went in for surgery, they said to me, we're putting thousands of dollars of Uber credits in your account. We calculated how far away the hospital is from your house and how many trips you would need over the next 2 week period to visit her. We don't want you to ever think about it.
Oh my God.
You know, not that that was even on my radar, but
they're on it.
They've thought of things that like, I wasn't even thinking about. And they were like, we just don't even want you to worry about it.
And like, you wouldn't have that kind of help if you weren't so open.
Right. I know. And I had friends. I have one of my closest, best friends mm-hmm. lives in Akron, and she probably doesn't even remember she did this, but she offered to come home, and she's like, I will be your driver yeah. every day. I will pick you up and drop you off.
Yeah.
I will wait at the hospital till you're done. I'll mm-hmm. take you home. Like, people just were so nice and giving in ways that I didn't even know I needed.
Right.
But I totally need it.
And I don't know if that is a Cincinnati thing. I don't know. It is unbelievable. Community is everything.
Totally.
And like, you and I have been such fortunate recipients.
Totally.
And it literally is life-changing. So for anyone out there who has someone who is going through something in their life, these are such great examples for how to get involved. Don't ask what I can do. Offer what you can do
right.
and let them take you up on it or not. Yeah. But just know that your offer is life-changing.
Totally.
And that like, if they say no, it has nothing to do with you.
Right.
It's just what they can manage and handle
totally.
Or what they need.
And like, people just, even the meals, and like, we've yeah. all been a part of meal trains, right? Like,
right.
It's just, it is a lot, and it's mm-hmm. a lot to do for someone. And
yes.
it's, and I don't even know who put it together and how many people contributed.
Yeah.
And that's where like, mm-hmm. I forever feel indebted to people. I don't even know, you know,
right.
who to thank any at this point. Cause
right?
I'm like, things are just showing up and people are being fed. People are coming into my house and unpacking stuff in my fridge.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it just was a whole wild ride.
And so I'm in like a time where you can barely remember.
Yeah, where I'm literally like, I can't do anything.
Right. You just have to accept it.
Totally.
Accept where you are.
You are. And I think in this time period too, I just really learned, and this is one, I think what a great takeaway for people would be is at this time in my life, and even the year and two after, I viewed my friendships as flowers. And it yeah. sounds so crazy to say, but I'm like, I cannot water these flowers currently. I cannot be the friend to you that I want to be and that
yes.
you're used to me being.
Yes.
And if that friendship dies off.
Yes.
Without any water,
Yes.
It's not going to be a part of my world anymore. But if you can survive and hang with me.
Yes.
And it without being watered, I will be able to water you again.
Yes.
But in this time period, I can't. And there were definitely situations I ran into where.
Yes.
Same. Things yes. moved in different directions. And coming out of it, it's obvious to me, like who could hang?
Yeah.
And it's a reminder to me to like, just because I'm not getting
right.
the text back or seeing the friends all the time that I used to see, it doesn't mean that I can't still keep them close in my mind and, you know,
yeah.
on top of mind.
I literally like, I'm going to think about that all day because it's so true.
It's so true. It's just if you, I just was not in a spot
right.
to water any of my friendships,
yes.
but I felt so grateful
yes.
to have people you know, thinking of me.
And who didn't leave your side.
Totally. There are it didn't need anything. Right. The low maintenance friends. Don't you feel like this? I feel like we talk about this. The older we get, the low maintenance friendships are the friendships that I find myself leaning into more.
Yes. Because it's easy and the value exchange is just there because it's inherent. And oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah.
Literally.
So it was a great, it was a wild time, but it made me feel very blessed to be in such a wonderful community.
I think one of the common themes in my life and with all these women that I've talked to, and that I see in you is that like, there's so much beautiful perspective
totally
in the hardships of life mm-hmm. that like, it really is a gift that you never wanted, but that you get.
Oh, totally. I mean, I lived a full life of like, I couldn't think of one thing. I had a wonderful childhood.
Yeah.
Loving, married parents. Mm-hmm. I had sisters who I adored. Mm-hmm. I had a great education. I had a happy home. Yeah. Like there was not one thing that I had and this was my thing.
Yeah.
And it rocked my world, but for the better.
Totally. Right. So how did you guys know that the surgery worked?
So, you know, did we ever like, I don't know. I just, they were home. She was in the hospital and then they released this baby to you. Don't you remember the first time they gave you a baby? Like or you had your baby and they were like, take the baby home. You're like, are you sure?
Are you sure? Me?
Yeah.
Me.
Don't look in my direction.
Did I just have this right. Baby? I know.
Who are you I felt like that all over again. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, I'm not
terrifying.
Capable. They handed us a binder.
Binder. I got the binder.
15 different meds, three different times a day.
That you like literally can't mess by minutes.
No, she's in a port. They're like, she can't touch. She can't get it wet. She does. It's an emergency. She can't spike a fever. She can't. I mean, it was like, she
Here's
can't
my
be
direct
outside.
Phone number.
Oh like, my gosh. Uh-huh. And it was an entire year. That was a total blur. But basically they said, if she can survive the entire year without any major episodes, mm-hmm. that the likelihood she'll do better long-term is higher.
Okay.
So don't leave your house, basically.
Okay.
And she was pretty much, that's why like we were in lockdown before lockdown was a thing.
You're like, I'm actually a professional.
Totally. And I actually, yes.
I secretly love lockdown.
I kind of did a little. I was like, oh, my people, so close. Yeah. But in that year, it really helped that our surgeon, the mm-hmm. smartest woman in the biz was like five houses down. Mm-hmm. I could tell you the exact moment she left for work and the exact moment she got home, because I was out on that street with a stroller,
right,
waving her down. Hey, does she look? Jordan's like, you're gonna force her to move.
You're like, I don't care.
I'm like, I don't care.
I know. I don't
care. She was so patient, lovely with me.
Yeah.
She sounds. But we were like, she's amazing. She is a badass.
Yeah.
And just one of those people that just is a badass and like doesn't want to be acknowledged. You know.
And those are like
under the radar,
extra special people that are just like a secret badass.
Oh yeah.
That can like, you know, some people are incredibly cerebral and like as all these surgeons are and so many other people, but then they sort of like, you know, your brain only has so many facets sometimes don't have that like softer people side.
Yep.
And when you find people that have both, you're like, you.
And did we hit the jackpot? She is the surgeon that introduced us to our current doctor. That is B's liver doctor. We live and die by this lady, Dr. Kathleen Campbell. Mm-hmm. She is, I can't say enough incredible things about this woman. I mean, you never meet a doctor that has as equal amount of intelligence as they do bedside manner. And this woman is top notch. I mean, we attribute all of B's success to her and her care.
Okay. So you've locked down for a year.
Yeah.
Thank God. No major episodes.
No major episodes.
And episodes would be like spike a fever.
The episodes would be like an infection in her port that got into her bloodstream.
Okay.
And she would go into a coma. Like, holy. Episodes are like for the entire year, we're like on the edge of like, what is going to happen here?
Okay. So let's pause there for a second, because let's say someone is in the thick of it right now in some sort of condition in their life where they have to live on the edge for an extended period of time. Like that applies to some, you're holding your breath for a whole year with the child that could die that you're holding on to. You're responsible for that. The weight of that is so insane.
It's insane.
How do you, and you're locked down. No one can get sick. No one can do anything. Yeah. How do you take care of yourself?
I don't think you really properly do. I kind of looked at this as like, there is an end in sight here. I was playing it day to day.
Yeah.
We had really great support in our family that would be like, you two need to go out to dinner.
Yeah.
By yourselves.
Yeah.
And like, talk about it and go on a vacation or
Yeah.
like, we just, we just did what needed to be done. Yeah. And you just have this like guiding light in front of you of just, if we can get to the year point, then we'll be good.
Then we'll be good.
But I think for most people, if this is a prolonged thing, you just have to find those, squeeze those moments out. Like I remember one time being so scared and frustrated. Not that I would get in trouble at this point, but like left her at home and I walked out my front door and I did a loop around the neighborhood. I'm like, I need to be alone.
Yep.
This is too stressful for me. So finding those moments.
I'm no judgment here.
A full, like just on your own. Yeah. I think you have to do that.
Because you get to this point where you're like, I can't care for her if I don't do something about this right now.
Yeah. No, you can't care for somebody if you are not in a good mental headspace.
It's really hard to be a caretaker. People, you know, like, and I mean, of course we all have so much empathy for B, who's like literally fighting for her life, but to be a caretaker is so hard. I think that's a really separately another lesson is like that your family is like, like my friend Lauren, who was going through grief, she had a friend who was like, how about a shower? How about some makeup today?
Oh, yeah.
So like, I love that your family is like, you too need to go do this.
Oh, and I had family members doing that all the time. I remember my sister Mimi coming over and being like, I am just going to sit outside your shower door while you shower and just talk to you while you shower, because you're in and out of the hospital. This is the very early stages on, like, what's going on? And like, are you okay? And I'm showering frantically because I've been at the hospital for 7 days, like showering there. It just, you need those people that pull that out of you.
Yes. So if you are in community with someone who's going through something and you have that type of relationship, be that person.
Be that person. Even if somebody has a newborn, perfectly healthy newborn, go over, offer them a shower.
Yes, literally.
Say, can I hold your baby while you go upstairs for an hour and do whatever you need to do?
For the record, I'll hold anyone's baby.
Same.
Just call us.
Totally. Oh my God. 100%.
We'll brew good coffee.
Yeah.
We'll come over and hold your baby.
Yes.
You can take a shower.
We won't even talk to you. We'll just walk in and walk out.
Walk out. Literally. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's the best. It's just to have those friends that can help you through that, I think.
Even if I don't know you, I'll hold your baby.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Call us.
Yeah. Call us. We're available.
We're available. We don't charge a thing. Yeah. We're just going to smell your baby. We're going to smell your baby.
Yeah.
I just want to smell its head.
Yeah. You're out. You're kicked out.
Right. You're kicked out. Go take a shower. Take a long one, please.
Yeah.
I promise I'll give it back.
Yeah.
I love this though. And I think that I find, especially coming from Midwestern culture, it's so hard to interject yourself into it's easier. Not that it's hard to fit in time to cook someone else's meal when you're already cooking everybody else's meal. So I don't discredit that, but it is really hard to interject yourself in sort of that, like, forceful is not the wrong word, but I can't come up with another one to be like, you need a shower.
Yeah. Or just say, like, I have a friend who I like was an acquaintance at the time, who's come on to my very close friends at the time. All she did was text me and said, there is a coffee and a muffin outside your door. And I was like, you know what? That really hit. I'll never forget that. I mean, out of all the meals that were prepared and dropped off, like, it was one of the ones that I just was like, she didn't expect a hug. She didn't expect to say hi and get a full one-on-one update. She just dropped it and ran, and it felt good.
I think that's another thing that like people need to realize. And, I guess check in with yourself subconsciously, because I find that a lot is it becomes about the person providing, and it's like, this isn't about you right now.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds really harsh, but it does kind of go there sometimes.
Totally.
Drop the muffin on with no expectation.
No expectations.
And that is like the cream of the crop.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Totally. Absolutely.
Okay. Hold on. Let me check time, because you got to pick up a kid.
I know.
Oh man, girl, we got to hustle.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're going to wrap this episode up in 20 minutes. And I still have two more sections. Giddy up. Here we go. Okay. So what you're most passionate about though is providing hope. So you had mentioned before we hopped on and started filming that you counsel a lot of families who are kind of like behind you in the stage.
Yes.
Tell me how you guys got to a place of hope. So like fast forward, B is a healthy kid.
So having a chronic child, so somebody that will live with us for always, she is on immunosuppressants.
Yes.
She is one of the very few kids that are only on immunosuppressants. A lot of kiddos that are post-transplant ebb and flow between a bunch of different types of medications, depending on how their health is doing.
Yeah.
We check labs once a month. Mm-hmm. She goes in before school, gets her labs done.
And that's gotta be so hard.
It's a lot. It's a lot on her. And I feel like coming up as like now a 9-year-old, she just was in a hospital for just a liver biopsy and just the emotions that go through that.
Yeah.
As of right now, we are in a good spot. She's on her immunosuppressants and she's doing great. That ebbs and flows all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time. So most kids are just in between all that. Now, I find there are kiddos in her same situation that are, or in other situations that are chronic kids that are, you know, the hospital recommends you keep them in more of like a bubble, let's say, than what we have done in a few different ways. And for us, it is what works. Yeah. I don't want to raise a child with severe anxiety over their health. Yes. I don't want a child that is afraid to jump in a pool because she doesn't know how to swim. Yeah. I don't want to, I just don't, that's just not a part. It's something that she deals with. It's not all consuming.
And it doesn't define her.
Doesn't define her. So our hope comes from her and seeing how happy she is and seeing how good she is. And also being so grateful for Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Like I'm an action oriented person. My husband's the same. We have tried in all different ways to raise money for the hospital because that is what is our way to help show gratitude.
Yes. And it's cathartic, right?
It's cathartic. And I feel like that is what drives and pushes us in a hopeful way.
And I think that's such a great lesson to your children to be like, what has helped us, we give back to 100%.
Yeah. I mean, and we owe them forever.
And like, you guys do such a great job of even things like lemonade stands where your kids can get involved in the giving back aspect.
Yep.
One thing I want to pause and like really dive into, even though we're being mindful of time, is that like, in order to be hopeful, you have to put down fear, which is so hard to do.
Totally.
So I hope you give yourself credit as parents to set your intention every single day with your medically fragile child to be like, I'm not choosing fear today. I'm choosing hope.
I know. I think this is what makes me though, like, I don't know. I just don't think of it like that even.
Yeah.
And I just don't even think of it. Like, I don't have daily fear about it.
I
don't have anxiety over it. And I just don't carry fear. Like,
yeah,
I do feel like if I think too far in advance
Okay.
of what the future holds for her,
uh-huh.
that is frightening to me.
Yeah.
If I think about the effects that immunosuppressants will have on her body long-term, will she need a kidney transplant because of them? Mm. Will she have trouble having children? Mm-hmm. Will she have trouble finding a partner who accepts this part of her? Mm-hmm. You know, those medical hurdles that are in her future, no doubt. Mm-hmm. If I think about that, that's when I can let the fear creep in.
Yeah.
But I choose not to. And I'm not saying what I'm doing is right. I'm like, I don't know there's no handbook to this.
No.
I know for me, in my, to stay positive and get out of bed every day.
Yes.
I don't even think about it every day. My girl takes her meds on her own. Dang. I double check on her. Yeah. She is happy. She is very like, I don't feel great, or I do feel great, or she's playing all the sports. Now I'll come back to you when she comes through a bump that lands her in the hospital and she's missing all these things. And it's a mental hurdle for her. But as of right now, it's a part of our world. It's not our world.
I love that.
You know?
And I think it takes time to sort of unwind that because you went through like such a traumatic experience, and it sometimes you just have to give it time.
Totally.
And then you're like, you know what? I'm not that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not the post-transplant mom anymore. Yeah. I'm just Bee's mom and Poppy's mom.
Yep.
And I think that is so important for people who have bumped. Like, you do, if you give it time, you rise and you can separate from that. And then you get to fall in love. Like, I talk about this all the time. Like, I'm in this phase right now where I feel like you are too. Like, I just fall in love with the life that's literally at my feet.
Totally. And that's all you can do. And now having two other children, in addition, you can't afford to make it your whole.
Yes. Yes.
It can't take up my whole brain.
Yeah.
And the way we talk about it has changed so much because it doesn't just affect her.
How do you explain that to your kids? Your other kids?
They all know that Bee has had a transplant and that they know what that means and they know she takes medicine, and they are very much a part of her medical journey. Like, even this morning, Bee's watch went off. Her little Garmin watch went off at 7:30, reminder to take her meds. Mm-hmm. She didn't immediately get up from the breakfast table, and Poppy said, "Bee, you got to go take your meds."
Like, I love it.
They are involved.
They're on it.
I think there's challenges with that too, that we're kind of going to bump up against, of like, Bee going to go get her labs in the morning before school with Jordan is a pain. And it's a pain for her to get up early, to go get blood taken out of her body, to get tested to make sure she's okay. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way my other girls look at it. My other girls can look at it as like, how lucky she gets one-on-one time
with dad.
With dad, she gets to drive to the car and listen to animal trivia. I mean, it is a different perspective.
Yeah.
So normalizing that and making this every year when we celebrate her liverversary, making it a family celebration versus just the focus on her has definitely been a shift for us.
I think that's like, it is one of the blessings of having more children. It's totally. Like, you know, like if this is,
the focus is off. I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. it's been such a blessing for us too.
Yeah.
Cause we can't just hyper focus on her.
Yes.
It right. just can't happen when you got other kids.
And you just got to keep living.
Totally.
Okay. So when we think about these families that are going through it and are like, I am not in the hope stage yet. It's like, if you give yourself time and if you focus on.
Give yourself time. And I also would say connect with a family or a person that is. That you can find hope in.
Yeah.
I find.
You gotta be intentional about that.
Yes. And Google is not your friend.
No.
I find that because of all that we have posted on, I used to have a blog and Instagram, like mm-hmm. I've received a lot of families my way mm-hmm. that I talk through these situations mm-hmm. and I know for a fact I inherently make them feel better because yes. what they are looking at is a very sick child that they might lose.
Yeah.
What they're looking at after they talk that after I talk to them and they mm-hmm. see B is they're like, now I can see what the other side looks like. Yep. And the other side looks good.
All you need
looks
is
like
hope.
A lacrosse player.
Yeah.
It looks like a third grade student.
Yep.
It looks like a fun, happy,
kind
child.
Yeah.
It looks like what I had pictured when I had this baby.
Yeah.
And so find somebody who is ahead of you in a happy way.
Yes. Literally, if you're going to Google liver transplants that worked.
Yes. Like totally.
Take care of yourself.
Or ask friends yes. and try to get connected through the hospital. The yes. hospital connects with people.
Oh yeah.
One of these ladies that I chat with regularly lives in LA and she has a son who is behind me in the process, but had a transplant. And, you know, we share ideas and, mm-hmm. and what we're learning medically and how to push things. I also had a lady that helped me that was a few years ahead of me.
Yes.
Whose daughter was doing great.
Yes. Like
look to the future and look to a happy future and just set your sights on that
yeah.
versus what potentially can be.
Because like your thoughts are either your greatest friend or your worst enemy.
Totally.
And you get to choose what they are.
Yep.
And like my favorite, I'm like obsessed with the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix where she's so like, right? I'm like, first of all,
yeah.
when is she coming on the podcast?
Yeah.
Hey girl, hey. but she has this great notion about choose again. So yep. like if you find yourself getting nervous about like when you think about what are the things that you listed that could make you nervous, you're like, or I could choose to focus on what's great right now.
Totally.
And you get to
and
choose
I
again.
Feel so grateful that that has always been my default. Yeah, I could see right. if yeah. it is not your default, mm-hmm. how debilitating something like this must be.
Yeah.
I just feel so great. I have not.
Right.
There's so much hope. She's doing so great. She's
doing so
you know, we
great.
Have set the best resources, the best doctors,
yes.
you know, like.
Yes.
Children's has been a wonderful place for us.
Ugh, I think that like, I hope that, you know, I mean, we spent so much time talking about the hard stuff and now like, I can see your whole energy. You're just,
oh, yeah.
you look light as a feather just sitting here being like, no, she's literally
she's
great.
Doing great. And there are bumps. I mean, yes. like when she was in the hospital for a biopsy, she was hysterical because
oh, sweet girl.
There are things that happen that are just not what she's used to. And there are bumps in the road yeah. where we definitely have those times where we are so scared and we're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
What would we do? But
right.
we live in it. We right. acknowledge it. And also I have a very fortunate to have a partner that like when he's having a hard time,
yeah.
I turn the opposite way.
Yeah.
And when I'm having a hard time, he turns the opposite way.
That's the beauty about partnership.
So it's a full balance.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
Versus both of us in
and,
it.
Like, and then lean into your friends that are your hopeful, positive friends.
Totally.
Like just everything. Also, like, I just want to acknowledge for a second that like, it is so hard. Remember when you were like the heel prick and little did we
oh, yeah.
know, like it is so hard to watch a baby get labs, but it is so much harder for a big kid to have to go in and watch, oh, you know, like
I didn't realize that it was a surprise.
Right.
I think part of the bad part about the way I handle stuff is I'm not really thinking into the future.
You, but why much, would you want to spend time thinking about
but
that?
Like, when that hit and she was just like, mm-hmm. you know, like
this sucks.
Yeah. She had a really, really hard time about it. And you know, there are things that we learned about what she had a hard time about that we will change for the next time
yep.
and see if that helps. But yep. it's a lot more emotional the older they get, you yeah. know, when she was crying and saying, none of my other friends have to do this.
I wish
I didn't have a liver transplant. Mm-hmm. It's hard to also have the conversation with her of like, you're so fortunate that
yeah.
you are here.
Yeah. truly, you know, like truly, truly.
She's just at an age where she can't grasp that yet.
And like, you just have to meet kids where they are.
Totally.
You know, like developmentally, yep. literally, this is.
Yeah. And what they can handle, what they can hear yeah. and handle. And right. like, right. we are very selective about things that we talk to her about and share yeah. with her about yeah. her health and phrase it in a way that is, I don't want to say misconstrued.
Constructive, positive.
Yeah. And yeah. it's not always, hopeful. But we make it that way because yeah. what else? I mean,
right.
there's no use in stressing her out.
No, she doesn't not need at to this carry age. That.
No, she's not making her own decisions yet about her health. So
right.
like,
right.
So we're still driving that bus.
And like, all you want is for her to feel like a typical kid. Totally. So you give her that gift of being like, yep.
Yep. This is a perfect example. We were at the hospital this week for a follow-up appointment for a change of meds. And yep. anyway, she's doing great. But the, when she had all of this happen to her when she was little, her belly button does not look like a typical belly button.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure even after all those surgeries.
After all the surgeries. Yeah. And it's always been a part of our conversation mm-hmm. to, and plastic surgeons, we've talked to them. It's purely cosmetic, but if she wanted to have a typical looking belly button, mm-hmm. it's an easy thing to do.
Okay.
So we've never done anything about it, but if she's going in for a biopsy next year, they brought it up of like, would you want to do this at the same time?
Yeah.
And we kind of talked to her about it, but it was tricky because I'm like, you're perfect.
Literally perfect. I totally
wouldn't change one thing about you.
Yeah.
But I also feel like this is something that she would want yeah. to change eventually. So do we wait until it's a problem for her?
Yeah.
Or do we do it? It's silly things like that. It's, right. it's not so silly, but
no, it is
it's
a big
decisions
deal.
That you're flying blind. You're oh like, my. I have no idea what I'm doing.
And then it's like, I find this conversation even with my teens and tweens
totally.
To talk about.
Totally. Flying blind.
Literally. Please someone give yes. me the manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. With daily updates.
Oh, yeah.
But like, especially when it comes to appearance.
Totally.
No, she's
I know
perfect.
It's purely cosmetic.
Purely cosmetic.
Perfect.
But you're also like, I want to mitigate this for your future. You're already going
if
into
it were
a procedure.
Me, if it were myself, I would 1,000% want it
yeah.
changed.
I get it. But these
but
are
But I'm
things-
trying not to let make her feel like what she looks like isn't perfect.
Right.
And with girls especially, it's such a fine line.
It really is.
So those are tricky things. I mean, know. Everything is tricky, but
yeah. I know, but these are the, like, you're like, man,
I know.
I didn't think I would be talking to her about her belly button. But
I know.
Here you are.
And here we are.
Right. And that's why, like, I actually, like, I really appreciate your strategy of just like, I'm just going to deal with what I got today.
It's the only way to handle it.
I agree.
I feel like.
I think
for
it's
me,
the only way to get through life
totally.
Personally.
I feel like that about the sports schedules.
Literally.
Like, I can only look at what is happening today.
Today.
I can't look at tomorrow because it stresses me out.
Every morning I'm like, how are you?
I know.
I
should do it.
I know.
Sometimes
I know.
You don't do it and that's fine too.
Uh-huh. On Friday, like literally after we hop off this podcast, I'm like, I got to wash all the uniforms and I'm going to figure out how to land all the planes because
right.
we got tournaments. And
totally. Pickups, drop-offs, the whole
right.
thing.
But you know what? We're going to get it
we're
done.
We do it. We do it.
But if I had spent all this mental energy since Monday worrying about the weekend,
totally.
I want to waste my week. So like when you are in a real, like, am I going to spend my whole life worrying?
Just can't. It is a worry. The whole, it lives in my brain
yeah.
all the time in the back of my brain, but yeah. I'm not bringing it to the forefront every
nope.
day.
No, you
can't
don't get
do
to
it.
Hang out here.
No, can't do it.
I love that. I think this is such good advice. So you give hope for yourself by staying focused in the present. You're very choiceful with the conversations that you have. You find beacons of hope and you make sure that you also provide those opportunities both for your partner, your daughter, and for her siblings. Like
try to.
That's it, guys.
Yeah,
okay?
That sounds that's, like. Do I do all that?
You
yeah.
literally do. I love a good recap. Sorry, I can't
love a good recap.
I love yeah. a good recap. Oh, I gotta get out myself. Okay, so hold on. How are we on pickup? Oh, we're so good. We're gonna land
yeah,
this
we're
plane.
Good. We're good.
Look at us. Okay, so the last that I like to end every episode, because this really is a podcast for women, and I really think a lot.
Yeah.
I am so intentional about what I can do to impact my little sliver of the universe. And
absolutely.
Mostly that means like who is coming behind me. And so I think about how I'm raising my kids or like what are sort of your wishes either for women or for the next generation?
It's a really good question. I want to raise my kids to be very positive people.
Yeah.
I feel like all that, if I could think about all that has gone on in my life in the last 9 years, mm-hmm. you know, with everything going on with B, that was an entire year of just high stress.
Yes.
To my dad suddenly passing away
yes.
overnight.
Yes.
To, I mean, all the medical challenges that we've had. It's just,
yes.
I think what's gotten me through is my innate, I tend to look at the sunny side. So I want mm-hmm. kids, I want to raise kids that default to that.
Yeah.
And it's hard because that's not in, I've got one that's not her default.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
trying to build that into her. I also really, through all of this, through lemonade stands and fundraising, and, you know, I mentioned this earlier, I want to raise a generation of givers. Yes. I feel like having kids that are givers is huge. Givers of their time, volunteering mm-hmm. in organizations,
yes,
helping people that are less fortunate, givers of time, givers of resources, donating money, yes, raising money to donate to specific causes.
Yes.
And givers of themselves, what their talents are. Mm-hmm. Can they be a good friend to other people? Mm-hmm. Can they be good sisters to each other? And, you know, ultimately givers of their body, you know, organ donation is a huge problem in this country because there's just not enough organs to help the kids and adults that need it. So givers all the way around and all the way through.
I think that's, and like the way, I think the easiest way to raise givers is to do as you are doing and is to be a giver. And like, you know, our kids are watching. And so when you have, when you make time for service, when you are like, we're dropping muffins off at someone in a coffee off because she's having a hard day.
Yep.
And like, you know what, this is just going to help her feel a little bit better. Or when you are on the board at Children's, because you're like, this is an organization that I want to be a part of because they're such an important part of my family. And all I want to do is give back and help. And mm-hmm. you have your own gifts and you're like, how can I help with the talents that I have? Like that is how you lead by example. And that's how you raise givers.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's hard mm-hmm. to do. And I don't know if I'm doing a good job at it, but I just,
you
I
are.
Know that's what I want for my kids.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, bringing all that in. We're so blessed. I mean, mm-hmm. truly,
yes,
like
you are.
I just, we all are. Mm-hmm. I mean, in truly. This, I feel like we just, to raise kids that are grounded, that are happy, that are good friends and mm-hmm. that are kind.
Yes.
I think is just so important.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, and I do feel like the world that they, I'm learning this now with teens and tweens, is like the world they live in is very different than the world we grew up in.
Totally.
I'm like, no, I'm like a cool mom. I totally get it. And
no.
I'm like, oh my God, I don't get it.
Don't get it at all.
So like, I'm also like trying to open myself up to be a better listener mm-hmm. and to like really hear where they are and what they need and to give to them in that aspect as well.
And every kid is different. Don't you find that in your house?
Yeah. There's not four manuals in this house. Yeah. There's no manuals in this house.
No manuals and everyone's different.
It's just,
I feel like that too. What he needs is way different than what Poppy needs, which is opposite of what Louise needs. It's just a different, you know,
right.
Treating them differently.
Totally. But I think you know, and you guys just all support each other. And I think that starts in the family and then it just bleeds out into the community. And because your kids have been such recipients of such community support as well, that they know what that feels like.
Yeah. And I think it's important. Like if you do, if you do have a child who's struggling with something mm-hmm. like this or similar, another benefit is that people know, right? Mm-hmm. So like if they look at B and she's on the lacrosse field and I'm not at a game and she's dragging big time, mm-hmm. they know it's just not because she had an overnight the night before. They mm-hmm. know maybe it's more than that.
She's
and the more eyes on her, mm-hmm. the more eyes on her, the better off that we'll be.
I love that. I love that. It's like no one, if you do process privately, I understand, but like don't suffer in silence and like.
Totally.
Yeah. We're all here to help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, this is so good. Okay. So I'm going to recap this real quick. So, first of all, thank you for being
Anytime.
Here. You
literally, thanks for having me. I wish I could be here all day.
I know.
This is so fun.
This is really fun. Please come back. So I think that like, one, I'm just so grateful for your time, because I know we're sneaking this in. But two, I'm so grateful to the community that supported you.
Totally. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. And I think that it is such a beautiful example and it has been a huge shaping part of, even though that is truly who you were to begin with, don't you feel like that like solidifies some of like the core
well,
values?
It, took, about it brought it out. It brought all mm-hmm. of this. Mm-hmm. It brought it out of me. I feel like I'm just like, you don't know until you're tested. And I feel like
Ooh,
I've got
good.
A lot of work to do, but I feel like I'm on my way there.
You feel like you're definitely in the direction. And like,
totally.
I don't think we ever stop working.
Yeah.
You know, like we all have work to do. And I think that's like, once we get figured out, like then something else happens and that's
you're
okay.
Exactly
that's
right.
like part of life.
Absolutely.
It's kind of the fun part sometimes. And so it's not bad.
Yeah.
But then we keep rolling. Okay. So I think that if you have a medically fragile kid, it is important to surround yourself with things that give you hope. It is to follow your intuition and advocate for your child.
Absolutely.
I mean, like we really kind of glossed over that, but you were like, nope, this is an area that I will continue to explore. And you were adamant about that. And it obviously panned out. Mm-hmm. It is as community members to do the light touches for help. If you are the friend that you can call and be like, take the shower, go for the walk, get the date. If I can come over and hold your baby, anything, be the helper. And to, you know, continue to focus on the positive and what's working and stay where your feet are. And like, that's truly like how you survive these kinds of things and how you thrive. Your family is thriving.
Yeah. We're doing great. Right. You know, and it's a roller coaster and it's not always going to be that way. I just have to be realistic about that too. But as of right now, everyone's in a good spot and we just feel very fortunate.
Right. You've been through enough to really take
appreciate
that
appreciate the good and appreciate the quiet. Like, there's not much action going on. No news.
I love a no news day.
It's literally good news.
Okay. So if you could, if you want anyone to sort of like take action coming out of this, what can we tell people?
Be an organ donor. Yes. I mean, I love, you know, love being more than anything. My girl will likely probably need another organ at some point in her life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we put a lot of resources and direction towards the organoid program at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, which a lot of people don't know that Children's is not only are they known for their care and what they provide our community that way, but their research is top notch and incredible. And they have a program, their organoid research program, where they're literally learning to grow organs in labs. So that if B needed an organ in 10 years, that we can just order one right up and they'll literally put it together for her. So
order it on DoorDash.
Yeah.
I know, but seriously, how amazing.
It's amazing. It's incredible. So find something that you're passionate about at Cincinnati Children's. Yes. Everybody is touched by that hospital in some way or another.
Yes.
My call to action is always donate what you can in any way you can. Your time, your talent,
your thoughts. Right. Truly.
Anything. Cincinnati Children's needs all the support that we can give it always. And not just monetarily. Either.
Right. Right. Give your time, give your energy.
Give all of it.
Give awareness.
Yeah, an advocate for them within your community and speak the good word and learn what they're doing and tell people about it.
I love that.
You know, Cincinnati Children's is it for us. We are very blessed. The number one pediatric hospital in the country, right in our backyard. What would we do without them?
Literally. I know.
And be an organ donor.
You and I are both going to, here we go. Yeah. Okay. Again. So to be an organ donor, like I have on my, this is just the silliest question. I have on my driver's license.
You just tell the people, put it on my license.
Put it on my license. Yep. Right. Cause I'm like, to me, I'm like, what am I going to do with these things? I would rather save all these lives.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there anything else that I need to be doing to be an organ donor? Like,
No, okay. That's really it.
Is that it?
Yep. Cool. Just advocate for it. Yep. Talk to your friends about it.
Yeah.
You know, I wish we were a country that had an opt-out program versus an opt-in program. But just opt-in.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do.
Oh, I love that. Also, like I would go follow Hillary on social. If you like, we all love a deep dive. If you need to see her story in more detail and find that, hope dive in. Also, if you want to be fully influenced by the cutest fashion finds, I swear we were just talking. I was like, I did it again. I clicked. But like,
thank you for your business.
Yeah. Right. Truly. Like you, I don't know. I just, like, you are just a ray of sunshine and it's always nice a beacon of hope, always continued champion for your family and for other people in Cincinnati. So it is really wonderful.
Thank you for
saying that. Yeah. I genuinely mean it.
Love you, girl.
Love you. I could go on and on, but thank you so much.
Anytime.
So much.
Happy to be here.
And I am so happy for you.
Thanks. I am too.
Yeah, you should be. Thanks. Yeah, heck yeah. I love that. All right, you guys, please share this episode. It is full of hope. Or if you don't want to share it, listen to it over and over.
What a feel-good episode going into the summertime.
Yeah, let's do it. And we all know people that need a beacon of hope.
Absolutely.
And that is what we set out to today. It feels like we did it. I'm feeling, you know, like I'm just going to put this in my pocket all day long.
Good.
So,
same.
So yes, please share if you feel so inclined. Follow Hillary, be an organ donor, and just get involved in your community because we all need to be givers.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening and we'll catch you next time. Well, that's the end of this episode, but promise me you won't stop here with whatever it is you're feeling or dreaming about. I hope you leave today feeling empowered to live life just as you see fit. If this podcast was helpful to you, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. I genuinely just want to help women live the life they dream about. So if this type of content tracks with you, subscribe to this podcast or visit our website, writeyourownstory.co, to download digital courses or to grab a journal and a mug to just dream in and dream with. It's your life, lady. Do you. And just remember, I'm rooting for you and you've totally got this.